RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. And please, I hope you will all remember our house rule, no Glocks on the dinner table. Thank you very much.
All right, hold on.
Okay. Yep.
All right.
Thank you, boy. That did not sound good. I think your clip fell out when you were moving it there. So
I'll get that later.
I know that'll it's a ceramic ceramic gun, but still. So, well, welcome back, Josh. We're getting close to the end of the season here, and this is the all Arabic episode of Arrow.
All Arabic all the time.
Yeah.
I thought it was the sequel to Frankenstein or something. It was definitely a different episode, which I am not opposed to. I am not opposed to different formatted episodes.
But they still had the flashbacks there in the middle. But they seemed to be slightly more relevant this week, as we will discuss.
Finally.
So, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about our episode this week?
Well, this was episode 21 from season 3, Al Sahim. Gesundheit. It was April 29th, 2015 is when that one originally aired. This story was written by Beth Schwartz, and the teleplay was by Brian Ford Sullivan and Emilio Ortega Aldrich. There's a lot of different culturally significant names to read.
That is really interesting there, isn't it?
And of course directed by Thor Frudenthal, because you got to have all areas of the globe represented in our intro here. So
we do, yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about this, all right? This episode. Oliver walks down the street. Roz says he's soft in the middle now, going to train that middle now. This new training's so hard because Roz has an opportunity, has a shot of redemption to send an old league rival to the assassin graveyard. Please, Diggle, take Ollie back home, far away from Ra's al Ghul. The Black Canary, keeps on training with Nyssa, but she's not in good graces with her dad anymore. The team will be her bodyguard, Ollie will be the new Al Ghul. Thea will be Speedy, and when she sees her brother, she can call him Al. Sahim.
Woo! Yeah! All right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just a side note, I've been waiting like 4 weeks to do that particular intro.
Terribly inspired. That was great.
I needed to get the title in there, but I also needed to know what the show was about. So I had to wait until this week's episode to get that all written out. And it didn't disappoint in giving me plenty of opportunities to fit it into the song, though. Maybe other ways it did disappoint. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Well, and just so people know, you write all your own intro stuff here. So, I mean, that's totally a Josh original. And that was very nicely done.
Thank you. And that will be available on iTunes soon.
Okay.
Actually, when this episode goes live. Yeah,
duh.
You already got it on iTunes. So there you go. Tell your friends.
All right, so just a little bit of news we've got here. There may potentially be a trailer for the spinoff show that we've talked about, The Legends of Tomorrow. Now, it may air during CW's May 14th presentation. I believe this is to advertisers or to their shareholders or something like that. It's kind of an internal CW presentation that allows them to talk about the new shows they're debuting next season, just basically talk about their lineup, I guess. Now, we discussed this yesterday on our Flash episode on Scarlet Velocity, But Arrow's finale airs May 13th, I believe it is. But Flash goes 1 week longer and will have an episode the following Tuesday. So there may be a chance that people watching the CW on the Flash's finale might see this trailer, if there is actually something to show. And yeah, you speculated actually that they they may have shot some of this footage when they were doing the Battle Royale advertising spot that was up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, what I was thinking, why make that, you know, big long Fight Club promo that they did, you know, for Arrow and Flash with all the different villains and heroes all fighting together. You know, why even make that promo, at least at this point in the season? And I thought maybe it had something to do with this little teaser trailer that they're supposedly going to be showing at this mm-hmm. presentation. So, but hey, like you said, it happened. The presentation itself happens before the finale of Flash. So why not show it on the Flash? I mean, it's gonna get out there eventually, or yeah. you know, the important people that they wanted to show to get excited saw it first, and now they'll show the rest of the audience to get them excited, you know, all through the summer or however they want to do that. But I think it's a good idea. I hope they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to see whatever it is they, you know, decide to show, but that should be pretty cool. And the other piece of news that we've got, this caught my eye. I thought it was pretty interesting. It's a girl and, oh shoot, I just lost the page here. Her name is Danielle Taylor. And she decided to make a or design a dress and kind of put something together that was Green Arrow inspired for prom, because they had a, quote, awful prom theme, Sweet Dreams or Candyland or something like that. So she posted a series of pictures on Facebook, tagged Stephen Amell in it, and he actually commented on her photos. And it's this great green dress. It's kind of a cross between like Green Arrow and Brave, sort of, I would think. It's got a green hood, and she's got pictures of her with a bow and arrow, and a friend of hers who's dressed up in red. It's supposed to be kind of like the Flash, I guess. And she said she got a lot of stares at prom, and then the day after she heard people asking other people if they saw the girl with a hood, and then proceeding to ask who it was. So the hood really does hide your identity, she says. So,
well, that's good to know.
Very cool. I thought that was very neat. And the fact that, of course, you know, Steven being as big as he is on Facebook, you know, made a couple notes. He said that, you know, she looked beautiful and actually took the time to, you know, look at her post and comment on it. So kudos to him for doing that.
I can tell you from firsthand experience, it does kind of give you a special kind of feeling when a celebrity that you kind of look up to responds to something that you put on social media. You know, I mean, even if it's a silly little Twitter favorite or whatever, it still makes you feel like you kind of did something cool to connect with them. So,
well, I mean, it is. I mean, just think, it's, you know, it's like writing a fan letter to somebody, but now you can just put it on your computer and it tags them and they see that they got a message. And I'm sure a lot of times, you know, especially with Stephen Amell, I'm sure he reads the stuff when he gets a chance. He seems to have a lot of time to, you know, a lot of downtime to play on Facebook, at least during some of his shoots, especially some of his night shoots where he's recording his Q&A sessions and things like that. But
I hope he doesn't have downtime because he's not going to be like the main character on the show anymore. You know, going to be like a, you know, the reoccurring bad guy or something.
Haven't you heard he's a big star in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 now? So, I mean, he's got that whole franchise to worry about. You know, Casey Jones and all that. So,
all right. Well, he's gonna have to start a new line of wines, I think, based on sports equipment, maybe, or. Yeah.
Turtle wine or something like that.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
Well, either way, after drinking turtle wine, we can talk about this episode a little bit.
Yeah. So, well, let's just kind of start out with the main thing that's going on in this episode, which is Oliver is no more. I wish I had written the quote down. Basically, they kept drilling a phrase into his head, and then when Ra's al Ghul asked him about Oliver, you know, it was like basically Oliver Queen doesn't exist anymore, or something along those lines. And you know, he's being brainwashed here. So they changed the opening of the show, the opening narration, to be they went from "My name is Oliver Queen" to "My name was Oliver Queen," which I thought was interesting. You know, they do that every now and again. They'll change the opening monologue, or they will change the opening titles. So that was kind of cool. But am I to believe that the producers really want me, as a fan of Arrow, to believe that Oliver is a bad guy now? I mean, really? Really? I mean, we're two episodes from the end of the season, and I could potentially see them stringing us out over the long break between seasons, but I'm not going to say it here. Excuse me. But the I've seen the title for the season finale, and that kind of, you know, reveals
some
stuff.
Okay. I don't know if they really want you to believe he's the bad guy. I mean, anytime you have a main hero of a show, no matter what genre or show you got, it's not so much about thinking that they're done or they're gonna, you know, no longer be who they were forever, but it's more of a sense of dramatic tension, you know. And I guess it's kind of like you know, those reality shows where they'll show the action going on, like say on Survivor or Amazing Race or something, but then they'll pull the little side interviews, you know, where they just take that one person that they're focusing on and ask them some questions about the scene that they just showed. You know what I'm talking about? And they'll be sitting on a chair off to the side.
I am familiar with these reality shows you speak of. Yes.
Okay. So you know, it's kind of like that. You know, they've pulled Oliver to the side and say, "Hey, we just need to do a new intro for the show now that you're no longer Oliver Queen." So, you know, when he's back to whatever he's going to be, he can re-record another intro. You know, he has to do that every season anyway, right?
Right. Well, but it's not even that. It's just that, you know, they do, like a 3-minute to 5-minute montage at the beginning of of Oliver training / being broken / rebuilt, right? And then Raish takes him to whatever the city was that he had to destroy when it was his turn to ascend to the title of Ra's al Ghul. We found out that his predecessor had destroyed Alexandria, which of course in Egypt, which was, you know, a huge a city that you know, got wiped out by plague in real life and everything like that. But the whole, I don't know, it's just, it's pretty quick because they wrapped up a lot of this stuff in the intro, right? So last week we went from him mentioning, you know, that he's going to commit himself to becoming the heir to the demon, and he took the promise. And then we get the little intro here this week, and then all of a sudden he's like, he's 100% sold, apparently, on moving forward with this. And I guess, for me, I found it hard to suspend my disbelief on a character move that quick, which I feel is just going to be reversed next week. Maybe the week after that, you know?
Let me ask you this, and I don't necessarily have an answer to this, but if they hadn't changed it and they just kept it, you know, "My name is Oliver Queen, you know, for 5 years I spent blah, 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 blah." Doesn't that kind of contradict what's supposed to be happening in this show? If they kind of keep it there. I mean,
I don't necessarily have a problem with them changing the opening intro. I think that was clever for them to do that, because it does You don't buy what he's. I just don't buy Oliver's character. Yeah, doing okay. this.
Well, I had some thoughts about him being, him changing character. Now, first of all,
okay.
I kind of believe that he went into this expecting to be strong enough to fight it, expecting to not give in to what Roz wanted, mm-hmm. And maybe just faking it, pretending it. And right. I think
that's what Felicity thought too, you know, because she's like, oh my gosh, Oliver didn't sign up for brainwashing, I think is what she said.
Yeah.
You know, well, he just thought he was going to go in and it's like, oh, you want me to be heir to the demon? Okay, cool.
Well,
and
then they probably all thought that. I mean, if they probably. Really knew what Ra's al Ghul had intended as his ultimate goal to
right.
make him, you know, the demon's head, then I don't think they would have just went, all right, see ya. Guess we'll go back and, you know, die and stuff. But I do think he thought he was going to be strong enough. And for a long time, I thought, yeah, he is strong enough. He's just faking it, you know. But then they had several key scenes in this that I think illustrated that he really has been turned over. He really is kind of not believing it, you know. I mean, or believing that he really is not Oliver Queen
right.
anymore.
Okay.
There was a scene where
hang on 1 second.
Okay,
so
I don't want to get ahead of us. Sorry.
No, that's fine. No. I do want you to explain that. I just want to take this point to say I don't believe that he's actually turned himself fully over. I believe that he is playing a long con here, that somehow yeah. he actually is strong enough and has beat it, but he can't let anybody know that. He can't reveal it to Nyssa. He can't reveal it to Felicity. He can't reveal it to Diggle. Nobody. Because if he does, then it'll be over for him.
Yes, so, I agree with that. But there were some key scenes that I think kind of made it seem like they want you to believe that he has turned.
Okay, so let's go through these one at a time then.
Okay. Well, the very first one was toward the beginning when he was fighting who he thought was Diggle.
Oh my gosh, that was a little tense. I was like, whoa, we're getting right into this here, aren't we?
So he, you know, it obviously turns out not to be Diggle, but number mm-hmm. one, he, they showed you that it looked like Diggle.
Right. So now, we're to assume that's what Oliver was perceiving.
Right.
Right, because Ra's al Ghul says that he's been treated with some herbs that may cause hallucinations and different people
right.
see different things, et cetera, right.
Okay, so now just putting that aside, him believing it was Diggle and going ahead and killing him anyway,
mm-hmm.
You know, that would have been the herbs, the drugs, you know, I can buy that. He actually did kill the guy, though. I mean, he killed this man. So to me, that's one indication that he's kind of already almost over, you know.
Okay.
But like you said, if he didn't, that would have tipped his hand right there if he was conning
right. So,
Rosh.
So since we kind of, I mean, I see where you're going with this. So let me just play devil's advocate for these.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Discussions. So yeah, I feel that he knew that it probably was not Diggle, even though that might be what his senses were telling him. He may have some other idea. And yes, of course, he killed this guy because, like you were just saying, if he didn't, it would be over for him. And he needs to prove that, you know, he's on board with this whole thing. Killing is not new for Oliver. It's something that he's done before. Now he is trying to get away from it. But obviously he knew that infiltrating the League of Assassins for whatever purpose it serves in the long run, which I still don't know that we may not know Oliver's true motive for doing what he's doing. I mean, it seems like his motive is basically he's been broken and that it's really his only choice, but there may be an ulterior motive that's in there.
Now, do you mean an ulterior motive in order for him to get out of this or an ulterior motive, for League of Assassins purposes,
for joining being with the League of Assassins. Like maybe my thoughts always kind of been here in the last couple of weeks that maybe you know, he kept saying no, and they kept pushing, and obviously they pushed him really far, but maybe he's come up with a plan where he thinks he can bring them down from the inside, you know, like accept this, and then I'll dismantle the apparatus.
Oh my gosh.
You know, something like that.
That's a gamble, though. That's a huge gamble.
I know. Well, I mean, and that, unfortunately, we don't really have enough information to know about that, because obviously if we knew that that's what he was going in with, I think the stakes would be much greater than they are right now. Right now I'm like, okay, well, he's brainwashed. I don't know. You know, again, I don't know if I buy all this stuff, but anyway, he's killed a guy. He has to do it again. It's, you know, it's basically this guy or Oliver is going to die. And yeah, so Oliver, you know, push comes to shove, Oliver will keep moving on with that. So,
and even at that point, I had no doubt in my mind that he was still the good guy. I was still believing wholeheartedly that he was playing Raj.
Okay.
Then, you know, there's a scene where he fights Diggle pretty hard, the real Diggle.
Doesn't kill him.
I guess that's the scene where I'll call her Speedy. That's the scene where Speedy stopped him, right? Shot the arrow through his arm.
Oh, that was great.
That was cool.
That was a scene that was just like Jakarta. Oh, I know what you mean. And then she pulls the two guns out. That gave me the chills when, you know, because Felicity had said, oh, you're not searching me. And, you know, Maceo checks with Oliver and he's like, that's fine. She's cool.
And when Oliver nodded there, I had some more doubt there. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. But then really the one scene that I did kind of question whether or not he had turned, and I think this actually was before that, but it was when he was fighting Nyssa and he had her on the ledge. He had the sword to her neck.
Yeah.
Laurel stopped him and Diggle, I suppose.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, where could he have gone from there? After that, after he had her, where could he have gone? He was alone. There were no other League of Assassins. I suppose they could have had him, you know, been watching him or something. But, I don't know where he could have gone from there without killing her or ending up taking her back like he really did. But so those were just a few scenes that I thought maybe, okay, maybe he kind of is turned. Maybe Raj succeeded in this. But I don't think it's going to be permanent. Okay, I mean,
yeah,
I never thought it was going to be permanent,
right.
Even if he was turned.
Yeah, even if he is turned, it's not going to be permanent. The other scene to me that really belies the, you know, his poker face, let's call it his poker face, because, you know, I'm thinking of a couple scenes now. One, Raish asks him, you know, who did you see when you killed this guy? And Oliver is really stoic. He just keeps that poker face, and Raj is like, okay. Fine. All right. I got something else to show you. Like, you know, you don't want to tell me? That's cool. Oliver is about to kill Nyssa. And again, kind of like I was kind of harping about, you know, the League of Assassins the other week, he stops Oliver from killing Nyssa. It's like, oh, all right. I see you're totally serious about killing Nyssa. So you don't have to because you've broken her. It's like, well, right. So if Oliver doesn't try to kill her, he's faking it. So, but if he does try to kill her, oh, I'm going to stop you because you've done a great job.
He did not know that he was going to stop him. He didn't know Ra's al Ghul was going to stop him from killing her, did he? I mean, do you think he did?
Well, I don't know. I mean, but maybe, you know, he's playing on that, right? You know, he's because what did he? I'm just wondering, did he see one of these before? He saw him save Maceo last week.
Oh, right.
Right?
And yes, that's right. That could have been some foreshadowing there.
Right. And my
third... That's good insight.
And my third thing is when, you know, again, because who's to say that Nyssa and Oliver haven't communicated in some fashion, and this is all a setup. You're going back to your roof theory. Where else would he go? Well, maybe he knew that he had told Nyssa, I'm going to try to stop you, but you need to make sure that, you know, a couple of my friends are there to stop you, and I'll make sure there are no other league members, right? Because if the other league was there, they definitely would have got Nyssa and probably taken out Canary and Diggle. But he made sure that he did it on his own. And now, is Maceo working with him? Because, you know, Maceo said, you know, people thought you would not return, but not me. you know, like, and he looks back at the other league members when he says that, like, you know, I always had faith in you, Oliver or Al-Saheem.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. Well, it seemed kind of weird like that. But come the end of the episode, when marriage is proposed, you know, and she's, and Nyssa starts freaking out. It's like, no way am I going to be married to this guy. The look on Oliver's face, I'm like, he's letting his facade crack right there, because you can kind of see, like, holy crap, this is really not what I had in mind. This is not going where I think it's supposed to go. So
he's more freaked out about getting married to Nyssa, who, than he is about killing her. Come on, Oliver.
But she fires arrows for the other team. I don't know. So, well, yeah. I'll get to that in a few minutes. So,
All of those are great points. And again, it put enough of that doubt in it to make me, you know, again, not think Oliver's gone forever, but give me enough dramatic tension, I guess, to be entertained by that part of it. I'm still not really 100% sure if he's fooling him or if he's going to come back to us.
Well, now Team Arrow seems to underthink. There's absolutely no way, and a couple of them say this multiple times, none more so than Felicity, that he has not undergone brainwashing. There's no possible way. Wait, what's he doing? Holy crap. And then they realize that maybe he has. And that's when they, you know, they kind of drink a little toast to him and have Diggle's phrase, what, gone but not forgotten,
right?
That they bring up, which is
then
cool.
They kind of had that nice little emotional scene right after that, where they were all sort of, you know, contemplating within themselves, you know, and it ended with Felicity in the old Arrow cave crying on the chair, you know, which I thought was kind of an interesting scene.
And also, I like the fact that there were a couple scenes, they kept going by the picture of Diggle and Oliver from Diggle's wedding. And in that montage that you were just talking about, Diggle picks it up and it's, you know, I was waiting for him to take it and just kind of put it face down, like you see people do, you know, where it's like they're closing off that chapter of their life. But
I thought the same thing.
He picked it up and, you know, actually, you know, stared at it and was contemplating the friendship, I guess, that is
lost. Yeah, it was more like remembering somebody that had died, you know, as opposed to saying, oh, this guy's a jerk now. He's saying, oh, you know, my friend is dead. That was kind of what I took from it.
Yeah, they do kind of look at it that way. But Team Arrow is surviving, right? They even say the only thing left of Oliver is us. And they go on to continue keeping the city safe. They got John's out working solo with intel from Felicity and the suggestion that he might get a, identity concealment that he might need. So that would be kind of cool. Laurel's still working with Nyssa. And Thea is still trying to cope with being back and, you know, being kind of moved to the side. She has some ideas of her own about how she wants to handle this, but nobody else really seems to want to, you know, let her in. Well, specifically Felicity, I guess.
I was a little bit surprised at how they portrayed Thea this week. I kind of expected there to be more consequences from her being in the Lazarus pit this week. And she seems to have just kind of pretty much gone back to being normal, brooding Thea, although she did have her stomach covered this week. So I guess maybe that was one result.
Ah, that could be. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's still a little messed up. But yeah, apparently there is not at this point any kind of long lasting effects. They did make it seem like there would be more issues going on. Yeah.
Well, hey, she was good with an arrow. She was from a distance. I don't think we had gotten really indication that she was that skilled of an archer. I know she's
I don't think we've really seen too much of her archery skills. But I mean, obviously she's being trained for the past year at least by Malcolm. I mean, there's I for me that didn't feel weird. Her, you know, having this additional skill and stuff like that.
Me neither. I just didn't know if it had anything to do with the Lazarus Pit or you know, I don't know if she was changed or not. Like I said, I just expected to see a little bit of that this week, but
right,
nothing yet. It'll come.
So another not theme, but question that gets brought up in this episode, similar to when Oliver was wanting to go back and rescue Malcolm the other week, is that, you know, they decide they need to protect Nyssa, which comes down to, you know, oh, are they still trying to protect the bad guys? And, you know, why are they doing that? And
'cause they're the good guys.
Well, that is obviously a good point. But is Nyssa really bad? And I'm maybe, I don't know, six episodes ago, I think I would have had a different answer. But at this point, I would say no. Do you have any opinion on Nyssa's fealty there?
Fealty?
I don't know. That's not the right word.
I'd like to fealty Nyssa. It's hard for me to make ethical judgment calls about other people like that, but I don't think she's any worse than Oliver. I mean, she's in the, you know, the League of Assassins, and we're to assume that she has killed people. But so is Oliver, and she hasn't really. We've never been given any indication that she's killed people for her own purposes, for evil purposes, for selfish purposes. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, she's been if nothing else, a soldier for the League.
Okay.
I wouldn't call her a bad guy so much. I wouldn't call her a guy at all, actually. So yeah, I'm saying no. And you know, what has she done has she ever done anything against any of, you know, Team Arrow there? I know Diggle was real mad at her there for a little bit, but.
Well, she was hunting Thea for a while. But, you know, it's that.
Yeah, but once she found out what happened, she stopped hunting her.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't call her bad.
Okay. All right. So I do want to talk about Nyssa just a little bit here. So let me just get this straight. No pun intended by that. So she's gay, or at least had a romantic relationship with Sarah Lance. Okay. That's, I'm just kind of want to go down some of these facts here and make sure that I kind of understand where this character's come from and where she may possibly be going, because I felt this was a really big episode for Nyssa. Even though it was called Al-Saheem, I felt that Nyssa probably had the, had a greater character arc in this particular episode, which is actually very interesting.
So you're saying it should have been called Al-Sahur? That was bad, and I didn't make that up. I'm sorry.
Okay. So her father did not seem on board with her relationship with Sarah. Malcolm even had a line earlier in the season that was, Roz has killed, quote, the degenerate who stole his daughter's heart. And that was when he was trying to make everybody believe that Sarah was killed by Ra's al Ghul and not by Malcolm / Thea, okay?
Yeah.
Nyssa, in previous episodes, has seemed to think her father did not approve of her choice, regardless of his gesturing otherwise. So she would, you know, she made claims that, like, you know, why do you put me out, and why do you doubt my loyalty and stuff like this, you know, because I loved her and stuff. And he would be like, no, I'm totally cool with it. And she's like, I know you're not. And he's like, it's fine. I mean, that's, you know, that's the vibe that I got out of it.
Vibe was like from a 70s sitcom is what.
yeah. It's like One Day at a Time. I would say if I had to pick one. And then Roz puts out an offer to Oliver, knowing that he will need to take his daughter out of the running to be heir to the demon, right? So his daughter is the heir to the demon. There's only one, But for whatever reason, Ra's now feels it's necessary to make it a competition, which really we never really knew about until he started talking about, you know, in this episode, how he had to, contest being heir with this other character, Damien, which we'll discuss in a little bit. And then Ra's al Ghul proceeds to belittle Nyssa and force her to marry the man that is taking over her place. And, you know, Oliver didn't really seem happy about this either. So he's gone from someone who is like, seemed or at least said he was cool about her relationship with this other woman to now putting her in a position where if she is interested and attracted to women, he's forcing her into a subservient position with a man who she may not be attracted to, just regardless. I mean, heck, I'd probably marry Oliver at this point, but
yeah, that's his abs.
Yeah, not this season, not lately at least.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, being forced to marry this guy, and not only that, is he's taking your job too. It's, you know, I put here demon's head, more like demon's ass. So it's unfortunate. And Nyssa, I feel like, has been used by Ra's al Ghul this entire season as a pawn in his bigger game. And for whatever reason, that game is, we need to destroy Starling City, I guess. I don't know.
So you think, I mean, you have very, very valid points there, where, you know, to what Ra's al Ghul truly felt based on the information that we have. So you think all of this is just because he was irritated at Nyssa being gay? Is that his motivation? Or
I can't say if that was his motivation, but because I don't know that going back and looking at any of the previous episodes might reveal any more. I think that there's been a lot of information that's been withheld from us as the viewer that, you know, it's now starting to come out in these last few episodes. You know, obviously the next two are gonna, reveal a lot more. I almost might think that because Sarah had ties to Starling City, that maybe this was something he was planning on doing anyway. And, you know, it seems like he wants to make war, but he doesn't have a good excuse to do it. So he invents a ruse, a play that he goes through in order to get insulted so that he can commit the warring act that he sees. I want to liken it to, I'm just not familiar enough with Shakespeare's Julius Caesar or one of those other plays, but I feel like, you know, there's a very Shakespearean kind of turn in this, though I can't point to one particular one, but, you know, it's just basically a character who needs to, he just wants to fight and nobody's giving him any reason to fight. So he has to invent a reason to fight with people. I don't know. And all season up till now, since we've started hearing about Ra's al Ghul and we've seen him, I felt that he was a kinder, gentler sort of demon's head. Not the Ra's al Ghul that I remember from the comic books, and definitely not the Ra's al Ghul that we saw in Batman Begins, which I thought was a really excellent portrayal of the character. And in this episode, I really felt the bite. Like, basically, Ra's he's the snake. He's been slithering around the entire time, and it's like, oh, you know, hey, I'm really kind of cool. And now he's kind of coiled around you, but you haven't realized, and he's finally starting to sink his fangs in, and you realize how trapped you are. And maybe that's where Oliver is. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden, oh, I see. He's got the Alpha Omega bioweapon, which, there we go. 21 episodes of flashbacks has led us to this. I think there's more to it. I think the flashbacks really have been about Maceo's journey, because I think coming down to these last couple episodes, I think Maceo's going to be really important. But,
yes,
you know, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with Ra's al Ghul. I really enjoyed how much of a twist we got with him this week. But I still, I don't know. There's a lot of other stuff going on, and I think we're going to see some twists and turns here in the next two episodes.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, there's still some information we don't know yet enough to realize what his motivations are, I guess. It was such a roundabout way of getting there that I think maybe it could have been done a little bit more dramatically and efficiently. And the flashbacks are included in that. I mean, you know, if that was the purpose of these flashbacks this season, I think they should have used them much more sparingly, not every episode, and then longer chunks of flashbacks than they were given us, these little short snippets of them and not seeming to relate until finally now, you know, we got to this
right.
Alpha Omega virus.
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Alpha Omega? Or no,
yeah, Alpha. Beta. Alpha and Omega. The beginning okay. and the end.
Okay.
And you're right, the flashbacks, they've been really short this season. Like, we'll go in for like a minute of a flashback and then immediately come out. This week had some really fast ones.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're going to keep those flashbacks in every episode, just chunk them together, just throw them in the middle. Or how about this one would have been good right at the end, right before Nyssa was brought forth to Ra's al Ghul, and he grabbed yeah. the sword. And it's like, I got you. I see what you did. It's a little yep. little drinky in your ski pole there, huh? I know what you're doing. Which actually, that was like my first thought too. Well, actually, my first thought was I'll just, you know, I'll frisk her first just to make sure it's not on her. And
right.
then I thought the sword. But he's her dad, so probably not a good idea. but I don't know. The flashbacks, I don't want to criticize it too much because I really do like the idea of the flashbacks, and I want them to continue that because I think next season we're probably going somewhere near Russia, I would guess, mm-hmm. or a Russian, a place filled with Russian people, I would think.
Anatoly will be back, yeah.
I would think so.
That'd
so,
be good.
So I like the idea of them, but I don't know that they were used as effectively this year as they have that, been.
Exactly, right. They were used very effectively the first year, definitely, because we were trying to get our legs. The second year, I thought the stuff was brilliant because it really mirrored what was going on in Starling City at the time. And
completely led you to the climax.
Yeah.
Last
right.
season.
And then this year, the flashbacks are kind of ho-hum. We're not sure what the point is. You're kind of rambling on about stuff. And, okay, we know what's going on. We've kind of figured out that Akio isn't around anymore. So, okay, and so now basically four episodes from the end and three episodes from the end, we know that he's dead. He gets sick in this episode, but we know that he died based on what Maceo said last week. So.
Well, and without harping on it too much, I also thought it
no, keep harping a little
well,
more.
Well, it just the way Oliver got to where he is now in the flashbacks, it just, you know, on the island, he was stuck on the island. He had no choice. He didn't have options. It was do this or die.
And he learned stuff in the flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not learning anything.
Yeah, he learned things that helped him to make him the hero that he was in the present day, either skills or ethical knowledge or, you know, whatever. And in this one, I mean, I suppose he's learning a few lessons here and there, but mostly they haven't gelled with the present day.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But,
well,
hey, they're not all going to be perfect.
Right, right, right. Since we're harping on that, let's turn to something that I think the producers have done a really good job in the last half of the season.
Absolutely.
This may be controversial because some people may disagree with me. And if so, I would really like to hear your thoughts about that, listeners. But I am not a stranger to disliking Thea and Laurel's characterization, and you can go back and listen to any of our previous episodes. There are certain episodes where I dislike them and just kind of wish they would go away. I think those are two of the more interesting characters this season, at least in the second half of the season, especially. Nyssa actually has a great question for Laurel in this episode about why Laurel's first instinct is to keep matters secret, even after ruining this relationship with her dad. You know, it's been, I guess, 3 weeks, and she's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I need to tell you that Oliver's gone back to Nada Parbat, and kind of blows Nyssa up. She gets a little upset with that. But I feel that Laurel has become kind of the conscience for the team. She's talking about losing their souls and everything in this fight. She is taking kind of a front line because of the training she's been doing with Nyssa. She's doing things like she's planting trackers on people. You know, she's like, this is not my first day. I know what I'm doing. And she's really getting a leadership role, and she's becoming a much better fighter, you know, and with the training that she's been getting. So I appreciate that extra confidence that she's been portraying in this last half of the season.
I agree with that. And, you know, I think we've wondered since episode one of season one how they're going to get Laurel into the call it, the Black Canary mantle or whatever.
Yeah.
They're going to turn her into that hero.
Now they're doing it, and it's kind of surprising.
It's surprising because there have been so many times throughout the last 3 years that where they took her just didn't fit the idea of a hero like that at all. And you know, and again, we've been critical of some of those times, and I don't go back on what I said then. But I do like how they finally got her there. A couple nitpicky things. The costume that she has is fine. I mean, and it works, but her new little addition, you know, her little canary cry.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it. At least you couldn't in this episode. So
yeah, you only saw it
more.
A little bit in the car when she was with Diggle, I think. It's kind of hard to see because it's hidden under the collar of her jacket a little bit.
Right. And, again, a couple nitpicky things. I'm not a fan of the way the wig fits her, not nearly as much as it did on Katie Lotz. Let's work on her little action stances a little bit, especially if she's going to use her canary cry.
I kind of thought that was a cool position for her, like just with the way she like, you know, was stretching her neck out, put her arms back and stuff like that.
I liked that part of it, but I didn't like that I want to see her like running into that or something, you know, and kind of getting a dramatic pose. And then when she's done, maybe changing it up or running after, I don't know. Again, tiny, tiny little things. It was just like, oh, that was kind of cool. I almost liked it. You know, that's how I felt after I saw it. But
okay.
Little tiny stuff. I like, sure. And then you mentioned Thea as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think Thea, you know, she's given the ultimate sacrifice here. I mean, she died. Not that she, I don't think she necessarily died heroically because she was, you know, kind of caught off guard and all that. But she's standing up for herself. She was joking with Felicity, you know, about, oh, my dad's a supervillain, and by the way, your door was unlocked. You know, it's just that there's this.
That was a good line. I really like that.
Yeah, there's this playfulness with her now, and she also talks about she's also very much standing up for herself, which she's never done much of before. She talks about she can't be handled. She's telling Felicity that, you know, please don't handle me now, like meaning don't just like shuffle me off to the side. I need to be doing something. I need to be doing something to help. And then she goes and speedy ups, whatever. She puts on a outfit and becomes Speedy for real. Which I would have loved to see more of.
Yeah. I think we will soon.
Oh, hopefully. Yeah. I hope there will be more of her, but I just wanted to see a little bit more in that episode. But you know, and here she is, she's now yelling at her brother, you know, to leave, don't, you know, don't turn around or I'm going to put it in your eye. And it's like, wow. And then they also teased something which I think is probably going to be a game changer. I think it was Malcolm that said this, that she has a hidden strength within her. And that Oliver can see that. And I think that she's going to be the one, you know, that if he actually has turned to some point and is not able to get back to Oliver by himself, she will be the one that helps him do that, which I think is a tremendous distance for this character to have traveled, especially this season where we saw her just being kind of used as a puppet early in the season and being, you know, being kind of mopey and out of it and things like that. I mean, she had business, but it wasn't as important as some of the stuff she's doing now. So I think that's really great.
Agreed. So Laurel and Thea both this season have really developed in a way that I thought was entertaining. But I also want to – I know he wasn't in this episode or seemingly in the series anymore, but I want to say Roy too. I thought this entire season really was built around the growth and development, making these three characters heroes, Roy, Laurel, and Thea, and turning them into who we know that their personas are in the comic book.
Yeah,
Arsenal, that's a good point. Arsenal, Black Canary, and Speedy.
Right.
That's who we've always kind of known that is probably where they were going to end up. And we've wondered for a long time if they were going to successfully be able to get them there. And I will say, in my opinion, I think they have, all three of them.
That's cool. Oh, and let's not also forget DJ Douchebag. He did a phenomenal job in his couple episodes. I think his character arc was very strong, and I think they did a lot with him this season.
He also ended up exactly where I wanted him.
Yeah, good point. All right, before we run out of time here, I do want to talk about the very minor character that was brought up, Damian Dark, which to me just felt like a huge, like, okay, everybody, pay attention. This is important stuff, because he was mentioned as being, I mean, I don't know. This just seemed really telegraphed to me because because they put it up front in the episode too. But they mentioned him as being the person that Ra's al Ghul had to fight against to be heir to the demon. And he wasn't as swift with his sword, so he didn't kill this guy. So the guy took some water from the Lazarus pit. He's been hanging out. He's part of another organization with a, quote, hive of agents. Boy, there's that word hive. I wonder where we've heard that before. We find out that they're starting to connect all these plot threads from the past season and a half here. He was behind the purchase of the earthquake machine last season. He gave Golem Kadir safe haven to Markovia. He forced Mark Shaw to do his traitor's activities against Argus. So I'm saying that this is the guy that is leading the group Hive, H-I-V-E, the group that we saw hire Deadshot to kill Diggle's brother. And because we're talking about it, Hive stands for Hierarchy of International Vengeance and Eliminations. So it's more of a, it's kind of a organization more like Argus. I think it's more of a kind of military organization, but it seems like they may have a little bit of, League of Assassins elements in it as well. You know, kind of a little old world style going for or something like that.
I originally thought they were making them more like the Argus type, but yeah, it obviously not. Now, so how did he exactly take the Lazarus water with him? I mean, how much did he have? How much does he need?
I mean, can you recycle it?
I don't know. Is it like sourdough, you know, where you take a little bit of it and it'll grow? Yeah. I don't know. Or is it just like a spritzer, you know?
Maybe.
It's got a little perfume bottle. And it's kind of, you know, spray, stay, walk away, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, obviously it's enough that the guy is still alive as much as Ra's al Ghul is. So, you know, and he's been alive for at least I'm guessing a couple hundred years. Basically, his Ra's al Ghul's previous master destroyed Alexandria in 1607, I think it said. So we're talking, it's been about 400 years since that Ra's al Ghul was there. So I'm assuming each of these guys lives a couple hundred years.
That's kind of what I was feeling too.
So we've got obviously a setup here for next season. I think. I mean, that sounds like really what they're trying to do.
I think so. I mean, there's certainly not enough time to tell a good story for that. So are you guessing that's going to be the baddie, the big baddie for next season?
Yeah, and maybe depending on what happens with Ra's al Ghul this season, whether he gets ousted and Nyssa takes over, I feel like we may have the League of Assassins in Oliver's pocket as a group to be able to fight against Hive, which I think would actually be an interesting storyline for them to do, to have the Ra's al Ghul fight against his old foe, you know, with Oliver. You know, that's
right.
That could make an interesting storyline. So we'll see where that goes. But probably, like you said, nothing much that will be done on that the rest of this season.
Yeah, you know, not a lot. You said it right there up front. It was very telegraphed. You said, I mean, it was very obvious as he was describing that. I guess if you know anything about the names in the comics, but it did make me want to speculate a little bit and guess and think about what might be coming. I thought that was pretty interesting, but. Yeah, sometimes they're throwing it in our face more than they used to. It used to be a little more subtle.
Yeah, maybe they just feel like they're running out of time and they needed to kind of get some of the stuff in now to set it up. So we'll see. Only like two references this week. The first one I just wanted to mention about, because you brought up the Canary Cry, which was awesome. So much more like the comic book version than the little disc that Sarah used previously. And you're probably wondering how it went from being the little disc to being this throat collar choker thing, whatever.
I'm going to call it a choker because that is what it looks like in her comic costume.
That's true, yeah. Her costume in the comics is a choker, and
it
then
choker.
The Canary Cry is a metahuman ability. So since they're not going that way, they've integrated it into her choker, which is cool. But... you missed its creation on The Flash last week if you're not watching that show. So that's how close these shows are getting intertwined now, that Laurel visited Cisco at Star Labs in Central City and had him modify the Canary Cry and actually give it its name and returned it to her at the end of the episode. So
yeah, I think Cisco is in Starling City, though. He just came and did it there.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Cisco came to Starling City to do some investigations in The Flash. See, it's really confusing, but that's how well
that's
they
why
do these crossovers.
Because
it's all the same sets, right? So it works really well.
Even if you watch both shows, it can sometimes get a little confusing. And that's why you listen to our show. See, we'll clear it all up for you.
Or muddle through it.
Or make it worse.
Yeah. And then Felicity mentions to Thea, and she calls Oliver Darth Oliver, you know, because he's gone over to the dark side. So as a Star Wars fan, I thought that was amusing.
And I'm assuming that was just an homage for the new Star Wars trailer that came out, right?
Probably. Actually, I think it would have been better if she called him Darth Arrow, right? Because then it would be Dark Arrow, which is what they were calling Malcolm for a while, right? Or I guess Dark Archer is what they were calling him. But, you know, it kind of ties in with all that. So, But anyway, a very interesting episode. We are down to the penultimate episode next week, which, as I think I've mentioned before, is based on a Bruce Springsteen song, as the two previous seasons' penultimate episodes have been. So... kudos to Mark Guggenheim and the rest of the staff for finding a Bruce Springsteen song that either worked or planning their arc in advance and saying, well, this is the song we want to use as the second.
See, this is what I'm picturing. I'm picturing when they first had an idea to develop this into a show, he had a playlist of Bruce Springsteen songs, and he said, okay, we're going to base the seasons off of these songs right here. See, and they've just built it entirely from that.
Interesting. Well,
they work backwards.
Yeah, so they work backwards from the title of a song. Got it.
Right.
All right. Well, very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what they've got going on the next episode. But for now, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Despite all the little quirks and things that we talked about there, I did still enjoy this episode, and I am looking forward to the next two. So, and if you guys enjoyed listening to us talk about it, we hope that you could pop over on iTunes right now and just give us a little feedback and give us a review. Also, I would love to hear your thoughts on anything we talked about today. You can email us at greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or, you know, you can make some shorter comments if you want over there on Twitter at Green Justice Pod. And you can also go to our Facebook page, see some of the pictures that we put up or news stories that we come across, or just, you know, post on the page. That'd be good too. Facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I host here at randomchatter.com, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, or Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All these shows are also available in the iTunes store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to talk to your friends about us. Let them know that you enjoy listening to us. We get a lot of feedback. A lot of people do enjoy the show and have been talking to their friends, and we appreciate that. And just remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.